Hello, everyone. I'm Mark Dorenkamp with Brownfield, reporting from the 2018 NAFB convention in Kansas City. The president of the National Grain and Feed Association says the trade war with China has dramatically altered the flow of U.S. ag products. Randy Gordon tells Brownfield soybeans have been impacted the most.
We lost it for corn a bit several years ago over biotech-related issues of traits that were not yet approved in China and some trade disruption that happened. But the big impact is on soybeans, and it has altered trade flows dramatically around the world. We've exported quite a few soybeans to Argentina, given their drought. There's some a lot more soybeans going into Europe now, and I know the soy industry and our members are working hard to try and increase alternative markets. But you know, I think we're very hopeful that long term we can come to an agreement with China. Obviously, that's a preferred market, and there is some need to diversify our sales and to different markets around the world. But we're seeing the impact of the loss of the Chinese market on basis levels in the Northern Plains in particular, and the loss of volume going into the Pacific Northwest. But we're blessed with a very strong crushing industry for soybean crushing. Lots of beans are going into that use now, and the meal being exported and the oil being used. So soybeans are finding a home, but it's at a lower value than otherwise would have been the case.
And certainly the situation with China has nothing to do with the quality of U.S. products. It has everything to do with the tariffs. When you hear other countries talk about the value and the quality of U.S. soybeans and U.S. corn, are they saying the same things that they have been? Obviously, we've heard very positive remarks, but are we seeing improvements even from, say, 10 or 15 years ago in the way that farmers in the U.S. can produce a crop and get it to market?
I think we are. The quality issues are not an issue with U.S. grains and oilseeds, and there is a strong demand for U.S. Commodities for quality-related reasons, as well as just the efficiency and the price at which we can get grain to market. Our logistics system, the system of elevators around the country, our barge network that's very important. Inland waterways are absolutely crucial to our agricultural exports for both corn and soybeans. You know, those bring about economic efficiencies that other countries don't enjoy. Many other countries don't. South America obviously is a very strong competitor, but that's where, again, I think the importance of trying to resolve the Chinese tariff situation is we are very supportive of the administration trying to correct some abnormal and bad trade practices by China to more normalized trade longer term. We're very supportive of that goal. But once you lose a market like that, it's very difficult to get it all back. And I've been around for a long time, even going back to the Soviet grain embargo days. And Russia, of course, now is a net exporter of wheat and a real competitor. And we never did regain that market.
You're in Washington. What's your sense on recent comments that President Trump has made about positive meetings with Chinese President Xi, and if there could potentially be a resolution to the trade dispute in the near future?
I think we'll have to wait and see on that, Mark. We're glad that they're talking. That's a very positive step, because at least a month ago there was a prospect they wouldn't even be getting together bilaterally to have those kind of conversations. So it's a good thing that they're talking. We'll see what develops out of that. I think we're all kind of holding our breath and going to be patient to see how those discussions evolve. But I think the administration's made it very clear that they want fundamental reforms of some of China's trade practices, particularly on the intellectual property and issues that are very legitimate trade issues. I think we also are seeing some increased signals that the administration is reaching out now to our allies, Japan, Europe, other countries that also have similar problems with China, to see if we can't join forces together to bring a more united front in trying to resolve these issues with China. China is a valuable market. It's one we want to sustain and keep, but we need to bring them into the normal rules of international trade as part of a long-term good relationship going forward.
You mentioned the biotech restrictions on corn from China before the trade dispute occurred. Also, the European Union has had some issues with that biotechnology. U.S. farmers clearly have embraced it. As far as breaking down some of those barriers with the European Union, with China eventually, you would hope. Are we seeing some progress there?
We are to a degree. I think one of the really strong benefits of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement is it has a very strong biotech section in it that talks about recognizing each other to the degree we can, regulatory systems, having a low-level presence policy. So if one of the countries has approved as the product, biotech trade is safe, other countries will work, Canada and Mexico in particular, will work to resolve any inner market differences in a very speedy way if an unapproved event gets shipped to Canada or Mexico or vice versa. So that's very strong, and we're hoping we'll see that kind of language in future trade agreements going forward. So, yeah, I think we're hopeful. I think our big challenge on the biotech front right now, we're very supportive of the technology as the grain industry. We love the innovation and the efficiencies and sustainability and all the good things that it brings. But from a trade standpoint, we need to make sure, we need to see if other countries can align around a science-based policy. And for technology providers to take appropriate precautions if we do have certain countries that are regulating biotech crops differently than we do. The big concern there is on the new gene editing technology, CRISPR-Cas, and some of these very promising techniques that are coming forward. We're hoping we don't have to go down the same road with them from a regulatory standpoint and trade disruption standpoint that we did on transgenic biotechnology.
2018 Farm Bill could get done in the lame duck. It might not. From the association's perspective, how important is it to get that new Farm Bill in place?
I think we join our producer friends and commodity group friends in saying that the certainty that the Farm Bill would provide is very critical, particularly in the kind of market situation and the economic situation we're seeing on the farm right now. So we're very hopeful that we'll see the lame duck Congress address this issue and get it over the finish lines. I think the comments that ranking member, soon to be chairman, Peterson of the House Ag Committee has made of wanting to get it done during the lame duck are very positive signals, and so we're hoping it'll get done during this few days or weeks before the new Congress takes office.
Well, let's talk transportation. You mentioned already the inland waterway infrastructure, how critical that is. How about the railway system and as it stands, but I would think that some improvements maybe need to be made?
Well, from our standpoint, we think there does need to be some improvements, particularly to foster more competition among the major rail, class one railroads. One of the concerns we have is that railroads are increasingly focused on their bottom line profitability, what they call their operating ratio, and trying to downsize their expenses to the maximum degree possible. We want efficient and profitable railroads too, to serve agriculture. But we've seen some situations where the service levels have degraded dramatically in some areas, and because of this drive to impress Wall Street shareholders and their shareholders with their economic outlook. So there needs to be this balance between good service and profitability for the railroads. And I think from our association standpoint, we're looking at a few ways that we might encourage the use of the common carrier obligation that railroads have to provide service on reasonable request so that we don't hit a rock bottom on service levels. And as more railroads are transitioning to the precision scheduled railroading model that the CSX and the Canadian Pacific and Canadian National all used under Hunter Harrison, I think that concern is growing right now. So it's a challenge for us to try to address.
Randy, anything else you want to make sure we talk about today?
You've done a great job. I think you've covered all of our major highlights right now.
That's Randy Gordon with the National Grain and Feed Association. Reporting from the 2018 NAFB Convention in Kansas City, I'm Mark Dorenkamp for Brownfield.